So we'll hear the next case of Amgard Insurance Company versus S.G. Patel and Sons. And Ms. Malachnick, we'll hear from you first.
May it please the court, Crystal Malachnick, counsel for appellant Amgard Insurance Company. There are two issues before the court in this action for interpleader and the nature of interpleader and for declaratory judgment. First, whether the district court erred as a matter of law by granting the motion to dismiss of certain defendants and not considering the citizenship of Amgard, the stakeholder who had pursued a complaint in the nature of interpleader, in determining whether minimal diversity had been satisfied for purposes of 28 U.S.C. 1335.
Let me ask you just some foundational fact in this. Did the court actually address your motion, or did the court sua sponte just dismiss the case for lack of diversity?
There was a motion to dismiss that was filed, Your Honor. The court granted the motion, but did so on grounds that were not raised in the motion.
So what was the court's specific conclusion?
The court concluded it did not have jurisdiction because there was not minimal diversity present, because it could not consider the citizenship of Amgard, the plaintiff and stakeholder.
All right. And so, and that was based on the 1335, where there has to be minimal diversity among the claimants.
Yes, Your Honor.
And how did the court address the 1332?
The court did not address 1332 at all in its decision. The court recognized that it had the ability to convert the statutory interpleader to one as rule interpleader under Rule 22, but it did not do so. And it did not address the declaratory judgment aspect of the case, although it had jurisdiction to do so under 1332 and 2201.
That being the case, ma'am, your last statement, how do we have jurisdiction then if she didn't rule on the declaratory judgment issue?
Well, the court dismissed the complaint outright, finding it did not have jurisdiction under the interpleader statute for 1335. It did not address any of the other components of the complaint.
Did anybody argue the distinction between an interpleader and a case in the nature of an interpleader?
The specific issue was raised at argument, but the court did not disclose at argument that it had questions as to its jurisdiction and as to whether it could consider the citizenship of Amgard. In making its ruling and in issuing its order, it did note in a footnote that when there is a nature of interpleader, that the stakeholder's citizenship could be considered, but held that Amgard had not made such a claim despite the clear allegations in its complaint on a specific count for complaint in the nature of interpleader and count two of its complaint.
And how did the court handle the declaratory judgment claim?
It did not. It simply held it did not have subject matter jurisdiction under 1335 and did not address any of the issues under 1332.
All right.
So our first issue is whether the citizenship of Amgard should have been considered under 1335 for purposes of statutory interpleader. And secondly, our alternative issue, which the court has already touched on, whether the district court abused its discretion when it dismissed the case entirely instead of converting it to rule interpleader when it had jurisdiction to do so, or to entertain the complaint for declaratory judgment, or to allow Amgard an opportunity to address these issues or amend its complaint. Turning to the first issue, dismissal was not proper here because minimal diversity was present as to vest the court with jurisdiction under 28 U.S.C. 1335. The interpleader statute gives the district court's original jurisdiction of interpleader actions or in the nature of interpleader, which is present when the stakeholder themselves has an interest in the stake at issue before the court. Amgard here had pled its own interest in the stake in the issues before the court due to the disputes over the limits of liability and the other issues that had been presented, and therefore its citizenship should have been considered as a claimant as to give rise to minimal diversity and vest jurisdiction before the district court. This is the decision that's been followed by the Fifth Circuit and the Loomis Court, and was an issue that the court district court raised sua sponte as the sole argument by the defendants in moving Smith was an issue as to ripeness. The defendants, as they have argued here, argued that because they had withdrawn their Tiger River time-sensitive demand, the issues before the court were not ripe.
Well, the court didn't rule on that.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Can I ask you, counsel, about the Roche case, where that's the American Family versus Roche, where the court analyzes the question whether an insurance company is an interested stakeholder separately from whether they are a claimant, and concludes that yes, they could be an interested stakeholder because they, you know, if the company is disputing liability to one of the, or disputing that one of the claimants is entitled to the insurance proceeds, but concluded that in a case like this, the insurer is not a claimant because they're not claiming a piece of the pie. They've put their own money in reserve and then are, you know, in that sense, they're only claiming that they want their own money back. That in that sense, the interested stakeholder is different from the claimant for purposes of 1335. I take it you disagree with that analysis, but where's the flaw in that?
Yes, Your Honor, we do disagree with the Roche analysis. I believe the court erred in Roche as it essentially rewrote the statute. The statute speaks in terms of claimants as to all claimants to the funds and the stake at issue. The Roche court looked at claimants in considering who was making a claim under the policy and focused in on using that term to define claimant, when courts interpreting the nature of interpleader have held that anybody, including the stakeholder who has an interest in the stake, is considered a claimant. I think that the Roche decision was also contrary to what the Supreme Court had recognized in Tashire, that in a nature of interpleader case, that the insurance company was a claimant entitled to assert their own interest in the stake. Tashire case did not address the issue before the court on the minimal diversity and whether its citizenship could be considered. But I think that the Roche court went contrary to the plain language of 1335 in making its determination.
Well, the argument, you also have the argument, I suppose, that a stakeholder by definition is somebody that's just a neutral and that holds the money, which is a pure interpleader. And in that case, you have to have diversity among the claimants. But when the stakeholder challenges the money and doesn't want to give it up, in the nature of an interpleader, it's no longer just a stakeholder. It's also a claimant. I think that's your argument, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. Said much more artfully than I have this morning, but that's exactly our position. When you have an interested plaintiff who is more than just a disinterested stakeholder who is interpleading their money into court, they thereby become a claimant whose citizenship can be considered by the court in determining whether there is minimal diversity amongst the claimants. The statute does not speak in terms of minimal diversity just amongst the defendants. It uses the term claimants, and as a plaintiff pursuing the interpleader, they are therefore a claimant as well. Yes, Your Honor.
Why is the federal forum necessary in an instance like that? If the only diverse claimant is the interested stakeholder, then it would seem that you could have service in a state that, you know, and use state interpleader, where if all the other claimants are in, you know, citizens of the same state, why is the federal forum, you know, necessary?
The federal forum and the protections afforded by this, the interpleader statute give you additional protections that the state interpleader do not have. You have the injunction statute that attends to the statutory interpleader in federal court, and it allows you to join everyone in one forum where you may not have appropriate venue in the state court.
But here you would, right? Because the claimants are all citizens of the same state and they're all in the same area.
Yes, you would, Your Honor.
Anything further?
Just as to our second issue, alternatively, if AmGuard citizenship should not have been considered, then the district court abused its discretion in not at least converting this case to one under rule interpleader under Rule 22, as we do have complete diversity.
I don't understand why you have to convert. Rules don't have to be invoked in complaints. Rules guide a process. And it seems to me that your argument has to be that you brought a Section 1332 declaratory judgment action that has been totally ignored. And the court at least has jurisdiction over the declaratory judgment. And in that context, it seems to me that once it determines whether you have to put up $500,000 or $3 million, then it can require the defendants to interplead among themselves under Rule 22. But it seems to me there's no invocation or conversion. There's no cause of action under Rule 22. It's just a rule, a procedural rule.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. We'll hear from Mr. Bamberg.
May it please the court. Thank you, Your Honors. We're of the position that at the end of the day, this appeal is kind of like some country mustard greens and really boils down to nothing. We understand AmGuard's position. Let me ask you this,
just a fundamental question. A party comes into federal court alleging diversity jurisdiction and asserts a declaratory judgment action, and the court throws it out because part of the action is an interpleader, and the court concludes there's no federal jurisdiction under the interpleader. It's incomprehensible. I mean, he just threw the case out.
Well, Your Honor, I think a big point here, and if we look at the procedure of this case, there was a demand made by the parties.
That doesn't have a thing. That doesn't make the controversy go away. The court didn't rely on that. The court basically said that there was no diversity under 1335 and nothing else, and threw the whole case out.
Correct. Well,
no other ruling made.
In part, Your Honor, and AmGuard never alleged that they were a stakeholder at that stage. This
doesn't matter. If they're a stakeholder, they're neutral. It's pure interpleader. And you have to, under 1335, you have to have diversity among the claimants, minimal diversity among the claimants. But in the nature of an interpleader, it's a little bit different. And but that's not what the court relied on. And the insurance company came in and alleged 1332 jurisdiction. And the whole case is before the court, at least under that. There is diversity between AmGuard and the defendants, isn't there?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I do not believe that.
Why don't you believe so? Where's AmGuard's principal place of business?
AmGuard's principal place of business is in Pennsylvania.
And where are the defendants' residences?
Everybody else, as it pertains to the case, are residents of South Carolina.
And is a mountain controversy over the amount, $75,000?
Well, there's not an amount in controversy.
Well, sure there is. There's a dispute between $3 million and $500,000.
Well, that's part of the issue, Your Honor, and this came up in the lower courts, is at one point there was a dispute. There was a question about how much money was there. AmGuard took the position that their policy was $500,000. Everyone said, okay, that's fine.
Let me ask you this. You withdrew that letter. If you've withdrawn that letter, can we take it that with the withdrawal of that letter, you are no longer making a claim against the insurance company for any amounts?
No, we have agreed.
Let me just answer my question.
Yes, Your Honor.
With the withdrawal of the claim, can an insurance company conclude that you are no longer going to make a claim against the insurance company for any liability?
Well, we're making a claim against the insured, and
I understand, but you can go against the insurance company. You can ultimately collect against the insurance company once you get a judgment.
Correct, and they have already.
My question to you, you're not answering my question. Is the withdrawal of your letter a withdrawal of any claim that you have against the insurance company?
No, Your Honor.
I didn't think so, and they didn't think so. That's why they came in for declaratory judgment. It doesn't depend on your letter. It depends on whether there's a controversy. And the controversy is that they are exposed to payment for this accident. And you're going to ultimately try to get that money from the insurance company, regardless of what route you take.
Your Honor, respectfully, I agree with you in part, and I disagree in part. There is no dispute over the amount of insurance at this point. There's no controversy there. They have said there's $500,000. On our side, we have said, okay, that's fine. We still would like to go forward and try these cases. So there's no controversy over the amount. And that is a big differentiating factor here is what started as a dispute, so to speak, about how much insurance is there. That is what formed the basis for interpleader. That is what formed the basis for a declaratory judgment action to seek the federal court. Hey, there's a disagreement as to how much insurance is available under our policy. We're asking the court to answer that question. Well, that went away when the decision was made. Okay, there's $500,000. That is perfectly fine. At that point, there was no controversy. But I would like to jump back with regards to the subject matter jurisdiction question here. And Amgard has already acknowledged that the district court can certainly consider issues of subject matter jurisdiction sua sponte. They have admitted that. They have owned that. And what this appeal represents is effectively Amgard is upset, for lack of better words, that the district court used their ability to consider certain things sua sponte in a way that maybe didn't go in their favor, while at the same time saying the court erred by not using their discretion sua sponte to do something that they wanted. And that's a big problem here. The court noted a couple of good things. Not going to rehash all of that. But at the end of the day, we think the federal court got it correct. There's no controversy. That is why,
to rule on controversy, the court ruled on diversity. That's all it ruled on. It said there was no diversity there under 1335. Therefore, we dismiss. Isn't that true?
That is true. They said the court does not have subject matter jurisdiction, and the court does not have subject matter jurisdiction. Based on the specific facts of the case, based on the stance of the insurance company, as long as the interested party and claimants, there's no controversy. Amgard was not a stakeholder. And more importantly, and I understood the point that was raised earlier about Rule 22, and whether you must plead it, whether or not you don't have to because it's a rule. And we understand that. But at the end of the day, Amgard was the master of its claim. Amgard, and I believe the federal court specifically pointed out that Amgard expressly declined the application of Rule 22 interpleader, and therefore the court used its discretion not to switch this case from a statutory interpleader to a Rule 22 interpleader. And those are two different things. When you look at whether it's a rule, it just applies, that's one thing. But as the court noted, Amgard expressly declined the application of Rule 22 and decided to go with the statute. And under the statutory interpleader, the court, in its discretion, looked at all of the facts and circumstances and reached the opinion that it did not have subject matter jurisdiction, and we agree with him.
Mr. Bamberg, I'm having a little trouble following your argument. You said the $500,000 is fine, but we're going to go on. Well, as a practical matter, the insurance company is not going to turn that money loose unless your client signs a release. So what is there to go further with?
All right, Your Honor, a great question. And to answer that, it entails discussing a little bit of the facts of the underlying case that led us here. This is a case about a convenience store that sold alcohol to a bunch of kids. Those kids drank the alcohol. There was a very, very bad wreck in Bamberg County where one of the kids died. One kid effectively became brain dead, broke almost every bone in their body, incurred millions in medical bills. One kid broke their neck. One of the kids, who was the youngest or the next to the youngest of the group at 15, is now facing felony DUI charges. So at this point, this case is not about money. And to the parents who buried their child, the case is not about money. This is about these people having their day in court. This is about a Bamberg County and a Barnwell County, South Carolina jury sending a message to businesses that the lives of children where we live is more important than money. That's why we say the $500,000 is what it is. At the end of the day, when verdicts are had, all of the plaintiffs in the underlying cases are on the same page. There are no bickering between the group. If there's $500,000 and AmGuard, okay, here you go, here's $500,000, we'll handle that at the end of the day. The verdicts are going to be important here, and that is in part a big part of the reason why we made the decision and our clients made the decision. We're not getting in some legal fight over how much insurance coverage this particular gas station has, because this isn't the first time. The underlying store immediately prior to this got busted by the police and SLED for selling to underage kids. They got a second chance, and they never fixed the problem. So there's a major public policy issue that's at the heart of this case here. The state of South Carolina, through the General Assembly, it's such a big deal that the state began mandating liquor liability to establishments that sell alcohol by the drink.
Let me ask you this. If you're interested in pursuing that case for much larger than the $500,000, a verdict much larger.
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you willing to release the insurance company from all liability upon payment of the $500,000?
We have already included in our brief that we're not contesting their assertion.
You didn't hear my question. My question was, if they paid you $500,000 now, which you argue would only be part of the damages, because you're arguing the damages are much larger, would you release the insurance company from all liability?
That's something that we could discuss if it's proffered by AmGuard. But at this point in time, rather than take that route and discuss that, we're here on appeal over...
Well, see, now you're just creating the actual controversy that's creating the right for AmGuard to try to protect itself with a declaratory judgment. I mean, there's potential for excess claims, bad faith claims, and all kinds of things. And they want to have their liability limited to the insurance policy, and that's what they're pursuing. You say it's unnecessary because... you have no dispute. $500,000 is all that's there. You want to have a public statement on a big verdict. Well, if you want to do that, the question then is, why don't you let AmGuard out for the $500,000 and give
Your Honor, we attempted that. We said...
I'm asking you now, forget the past.
Yes, Your Honor.
The question is, under your argument, there's no controversy now. And I'm suggesting there is a controversy unless you're willing to release them now for $500,000.
Well, that, Your Honor, is part of the issue is there at present, there is no controversy. Now,
will you answer my question, and then we can decide whether there's a controversy. But if you say you're unwilling to let the insurance company go because potentially you may want to make some other argument as to why they owe more than $500,000, then there's a controversy. So the question is, if you want to demonstrate your point that there's no controversy, then you should be willing to accept the $500,000 and give them a full release.
And Your Honor, I understand. I promise you I'm not ducking and dodging the question here. We already expressed to AMGAR before this appeal that we're fine with the $500,000, that they could go ahead and tender the $500,000 and let us move forward and get our verdict. So, I mean, we're not creating a controversy in that regard. If they were to would put that money up and it's held in trust until all these things are done, that's fine.
They don't want to put it in trust. They want to just pay it to you.
Well,
as part of the damages for the accident, and you can sue for the remaining part, but you have to release them from all further liability. And you're saying you're not willing to do that.
No, we'd be willing to do that. That's not a problem. And when I say put it in trust, I mean in the trust of the lawyers, not like AMGAR go hold it somewhere. Pay it to plaintiff's counsel, and we'll let it sit or we'll divvy it up however we want to do. And AMGAR just move out the way, defend their person if that's what they're going to do, and let us move forward. And we'll worry about collecting the rest through other means. And unless there are further questions, Your Honor, okay. We don't have anything else to add.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Luckick, do you have a rebuttal?
Just a couple of points, Your Honor, on rebuttal. First, as to there does remain a case or controversy here. Patel, the insured, has contested what the limits are. Their brief, when they filed it, specifically did not include Patel in their statement that they were willing to accept the $500,000. At oral argument or at the hearing on the motions before the district court, the attorney for Patel contested what the limits were. So we still do have a case or controversy here. And as you've seen,
Let me ask you this. If after this argument, Mr. Bamberg came to you and said, give me the $500,000, I'll give you a general release. Does that end the case?
Only if our insured also signed on to that release.
Why the insured?
Well, because the insured also
has liability beyond the insurance coverage, right?
Correct. No, I mean, as to AMGARD, we obviously owe duties to defend and indemnify as to our insured. And so our insured Patel would need to be a part of that, that release.
All right. I've interfered enough. You guys know how to handle these things.
I appreciate the court's guidance and inquiries. But we have, as you noted, we have no ruling on what the limits are. The statement that they were in agreement as to the $500,000 came after the court had dismissed our complaint. So we have no ruling on the record. We have no agreement on the record. We have no stipulation. And we've had varying inconsistent positions from our insured as to what their position is, as to what the limits are. We did allege that we were a stakeholder with an interest in the stake in the complaint. It's count two of the complaint.
You know, that's the thing I personally believe, and I don't speak for anybody else, that caused the Roche court to get a little off rail, because as I understand the interpleader process, in the nature of an interpleader, it's a two-step process. The first one is to resolve the dispute that the insurance company has. The claim, the insurance company doesn't want it all or none of it to go. And so you have a resolution on that. And then the money is put in, if the insurance company loses any amount, then that money is put into the pot. And then the claimants interplead among themselves in the second stage. If you had pure interpleader, there would be no dispute about the amount owed. The insurance company would put the policy limits into the court and leave and get an injunction. And that's pure interpleader. And there would then have to be diversity among the claimants. But your argument is in the nature of an interpleader, the stakeholder also is a claimant. Isn't that it?
Yes, Your Honor. Absolutely. If the court has nothing further, I'll...
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Our practice, as you probably are aware, we come down, it's unique in the country, I think, to greet counsel after each case. And thank you for your arguments. We can't do that now, but we do thank you for the arguments and hope you come back to our court again. And the next time you come, we will come down and shake your hands, I'm pretty sure. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll proceed on to the last case.
Thank you, Your Honors.